The Chris Perillo Show is brought to you by Microsoft Windows Media. Download Windows Media Player 10 at Microsoft.com/Windows Media.
Or Brent, Mr. Simmons, B-Dog, what do you prefer being called?
Brent,
okay. Yeah. Just making sure.
Although I might change B-Dog.
You like B-Dog, all yeah. right. God, that's scary. It's going to show up in the footer now. I know it. You were around in this whole the beginning of the I will call it a revolution. RSS has been around for quite a while and had laid low for many years. And then just a few years ago, just literally about 3 years ago or so, it really started to gain a lot of momentum. And we started seeing applications develop beyond Radio User Land or Amfetadesk. There were just a couple of very just basic programs that worked but didn't really work very well. There weren't any good desktop clients, I mean, as far as like users were concerned. I mean, geeks could get around it, but as far as usability,
well, they were all local web server type apps. Like they were all web servers that ran locally. Amfetadesk was a web server that ran locally on your desktop. Radio was obviously an entire like sort of web publishing suite that ran on your desktop.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and there were very few usable clients. But then you came along, and I'm curious to know your motivations behind starting NetNewsWire.
Well, the first thing was I had worked for Userland Software and did work even on Radio Userland, and I knew that RSS was great. I couldn't live without it. Had to do something with RSS. But I also had the sense at the same time that the browser-based interface wasn't my favorite. You know, I thought, here I'm on OS X, which was still fairly new, and just a wonderful operating system. And here I am with Coco, a great framework. And I knew I could do something beautiful and usable, something that people would just get right away. And so I started looking at other applications which seemed to relate, things like NewsWatcher or any email program. And it seemed to me that that was the kind of thing RSS was begging to be. And so that's how the idea for NetNewsWire came.
Did it come primarily because you wanted to use it, or you wanted to give it to everybody else to use?
Mainly, I know I needed it myself. But, of course, you know, I was hoping that other people would like it, too. And it turned out to be, yeah, they did. So now, I kept with it.
How well did they like it? How well has it been received?
Well, from the very beginning, which is now a few years ago, I've just been just kind of stunned and overwhelmed with how much people liked it. You know, I thought when I was first starting Ranchero Software, I'd probably have to do two or three products before I came up with something that was really a big hit. But people liked it right off the bat. And yeah, so we've been supporting ourselves and doing better all the time.
I got your website right, though, inessential.com.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And then do you also own a Ranchero brand?
Yeah, Ranchero.com is okay. Is the company website.
Okay, so you mm-hmm. separate your personal from your company that way.
Mm-hmm.
When you had originally released NetNewsWire, there really I can't remember any of the applications on OS X that were news aggregators other than Radio Userland.
Mm-hmm.
Were there any other desktop applications that had grabbed your attention that you would have viewed as kind of like, this is a not necessarily a competitor, more like a colleague or an equal, so to speak? The market was so brand new. Was there any?
Sure. For aggregators, there certainly wasn't anything else. There I had seen something called Pineapple, which was it never made it to 1.0, I don't think. And it was designed to be a GUI aggregator on. I think it was written in Real Basic, but I believe the developer dropped it. I in fact considered not going forward with NetNewsWire because I wanted to give him a chance.
Wow.
But then it looked like he wasn't going forward, so I did.
When was Slashdoc released? Was that before or after?
That could have been before. Could have been after. I don't really remember.
I can't remember either, but that's when I had started getting into... I had bought my first Mac. It was an iLamp, one of the first iLamps that mm-hmm. they had released. And, you know, it was just kind of getting, you know, into the idea of using OS X and seeing what OS X had to offer. And I can tell you, 9 times out of 10, the applications that I saw that were being developed for OS X were just far more elegant than even their Windows counterparts.
Mm-hmm.
You know, some applications were developed cross-platform, and you could look at a Java app on OS X and say, wow, that doesn't even look like a Java app. And then you look at it in Windows and it's going, right. You know, no. It just
although there are still some very ugly Java apps for OS X. Java seems to be the place where the UI gets thrown out the window in OS X.
Mm-hmm, sure. Yeah, I think you can do better if you you know, if you take the extra time, even with a Java app, to make it Mac OS X-like, but it's extra effort. So
you use the Cocoa framework, mm-hmm. meaning it's only compatible with OS X.
Yeah, that's right.
Had you ever considered going cross-platform with NetNewsWire?
I haven't, mainly because it wouldn't be that much fun. You know, I've done Windows development. I don't want to go back to it. You know?
Why? And I'm not, it's a question. It's not an attack.
Sure. It's more. It's mainly help. Chris is strangling me. It's mainly just aesthetic reasons. Partly, I've never liked the look of any version of Windows that I've tried. another thing is, I love having the Unix underneath, and I could use Cygwin, I suppose, but it's not really the same, you know. So I'm a big fan of Mac OS X and to a certain extent Linux also.
So you're just—it's just a comfortability level.
Yeah, absolutely.
It.
Yeah, I figured life's too short. I don't have to do Windows programming, so I'm not gonna.
Now, when NetNewsWire was released, again, you were to establish there were no other applications on OS X that had been released really for news aggregation on this kind of level.
And this was like this would have been 2001,
2002,
early 2002.
Yeah,
because that's really when it really started to take hold. What was the number one request that people are asking for? I mean, just in the early stages. I mean, did you have time to you know, process that feedback and really put mm-hmm. it into minor revisions or point revisions of the product?
Let's see. One of the big requests was to add some browsing features to the program so that people could open web pages right there. And then there were a ton of other things like searching or flagged items, a lot of the stuff you'd expect in any kind of email client. And we're only just getting some of those things in the latest release, which was a week ago.
Mm-hmm.
I'm hearing a lot of people tell me that the latest release should be 3.0, and we just kind of skipped over 2.0 somewhere last year.
Really? So it was such a dramatic departure then from the, I guess, the 1.x?
Yeah. We added a ton of features and took a little extra time in order to get them all in there and get the quality that we wanted.
Is it leaner?
Yeah, because it gets rid of some of the stuff like the there was a weblog editor in earlier versions. That's been split out. It's now in a separate application. So, yeah, it's less Emacs, more VI. At least that's what we're going for.
And when you say that, what do you mean?
I just mean just less less
less hand-holding?
Because
I've used VI before.
Yeah,
let
sure.
me tell you.
Yeah. What I mean is, you know,
I'm a Pico guy, so
by removing the weblog editor, we're not jamming two different applications into one. You know, it's just a newsreader. It doesn't do anything else. Now it has more newsreading specific features, but it's still just a newsreader. It's not two or three different applications all in one. So it's leaner in that sense, yet at the same time it has more features. So
there are now, I think, a couple of when people discuss news aggregators on the OS X, 9 times out of 10, I always see NetNewsWire mentioned, largely because it was one of the first in the field as far mm-hmm. as that platform was concerned. I've seen a couple of others pop up, like Shrook.
Shrook, sure.
And there's another one.
I can name them all.
Yeah, okay, name them all. I'm trying to remember the one in particular, but it's
Newsfire, it's very popular. Pulp Fiction.
Pulp Fiction, that was
Pulp
the one
Fiction,
I was thinking.
Pulp Fiction, yeah, sure. Let's see. Newsmac just came out with Newsmac Pro 1.0 recently. That looks pretty cool. There are some other ones you may not have heard of, but you may have. Newsfan.
Maybe I haven't had a chance to test them yet, but
sure.
The names.
Yeah, that's actually, I'm drawing a blank. I know there are more, but those are the big ones. Yeah.
So what makes NetNewsWire stand out from the competition?
Well, it's mine.
There you go. It's made in Ballard, Washington, folks.
I don't know. I like to think that that our attention to detail and our commitment to quality is what makes it stand out. I will spend tons of time, you know, going through crash logs, especially. Stability is job one. And I don't think that every developer necessarily puts that time in. But you have to. Because no matter what else your app may do, if it's crashing once a day or once a week even, it gets annoying. You know, people aren't going to like it after a while. So we go for stability first. Attention to detail, performance. After that, then it's features and design and that kind of thing.
Now, has you're talking about design. Has that really changed going from 1.0 to 2.0, like in terms of the user interface?
Absolutely. One of the things, Mac OS X is a beautiful environment, but it's also a very trendy environment. Apple is changing the look of things, and the things that people like change frequently. When I look back at screenshots of NetNewsWire 1.0, I'm like, wow, it doesn't look that good. But at the time when it came out, people said, what a beautiful application. Well, you know, times change, you know, a couple years down the road.
So does 2.0 have a brushed metal look?
It doesn't do metal, no.
That's good, because I frankly hate brushed metal and wish it would have stayed in the calculator.
I agree. I find it kind of heavy, but, you know, other people write me begging that I do a brushed metal version. So, you know, it's just a matter
of
taste.
You could make it skinnable and let them, throw it out to the community. Yeah.
Oh, you have thought about it, skinning it, or allowing people to skin it. Mm-hmm. What would lead you then to go down that path, or what's keeping you from going down that path?
Well, certain parts of it are very skinnable. One of the new features in 2.0 is custom styles. So you can change the look of the descriptions, you know, and get very complex if you want. It's not just style sheets, but templates and graphics and whatever you want. And that seemed like the best first step. You know, that's HTML design, and that's where you're spending most of your visual time, is reading the descriptions. So that's very skinnable now. And I may extend that later on to, you know, the look of the window or toolbars or whatever. But that was the first place to go, was the HTML.
That makes sense. I mean, it's what you pretty much use when you're viewing the feed or the items in the feed.
Mm-hmm.
Along those lines, you had, you know, this interface that really was, in my opinion, really different. And I don't know if that came from your head or if it came from OS X as an environment. It was enough out of the box where you had the concept of, is it the drawer? Is that what
the sides drawer? Yeah,
the sides drawer on the right hand side of the pane where you can drag and drop. It was really easy, really from day one. How'd that concept kind of come about?
Well, drawers are a part of OS X, and I think unique to OS X.
That was actually a Next concept.
Was it a Next concept? Sure,
because Mail.app was the mail
Naturally,
app from
right.
Next,
right? And I knew that in order for NetNewsWire to be popular, people didn't know how to subscribe to feeds. It was a new thing. So it seemed to me that a built-in list of, you know, a few hundred or something would get people started. And I wasn't sure how to get that into the application. Originally, it was a separate window, but it changed to a drawer before shipping 1.0, just because it hit me one day. Oh, yeah. I could use a drawer for this, you know. So,
and that's how it just grew out of the application.
Yeah, that's right.
It's still there with two then?
Yeah, and now we've got over 2,000 sites in there.
Wow.
Sheila maintains the sites drawer, so I don't have to go and find all these sites and, you know, add them and stuff.
Sheila is your counterpart?
She is the other half of Ranchero Software, yes.
Officially?
Yeah, right. Absolutely, yeah.
So is this your full-time gig?
Mm-hmm. Yep. We're a mom-and-pop software shop.
So now you've got obviously NetNewsWire, but other applications as well.
Sure. Our other application is MarsEdit, which is a weblog editor. And it's loosely based on what used to be in NetNewsWire and no longer is, but only very loosely. It shares just a couple hundred lines of code with that older version. It's a brand new app.
Which software is that compatible with? I mean, in terms of like blogging tools. Which
is it the MetaWeblog API?
Yeah, it uses Blogger API, MetaWeblog, movable types, extensions. It works with Blossom type weblogs. So just about everything. It doesn't do the Atom editing API yet, but that's our top priority right now.
Is that even final yet?
No. But there are people such as, it's kind of a rush because Blogger somehow actually uses the Atom Publishing API, a non-finalized version. And in order for to be able to edit the titles, I need to adopt the non-finalized Atom editing API, which is a little crazy, but yeah, I'll do it.
Now, I'm curious how many, if you have any numbers or just generalized numbers, how many users of Mars Edit are using something like Blogger versus other platforms like Movable Type or WordPress? Does there seem to be a leader in the blog publishing platform?
That's a great question. I have no numbers. I get the most email from WordPress users, and I suspect that's because WordPress is kind of new and still has bugs that they're working out. And I get very little email from Movable Type users, but I think it's probably because Movable Type has fixed most of those editing bugs by now.
Been around for a while.
It seems like more, WordPress, Movable Type, that kind of server-based rather than Blossom or something running on your desktop.
Even like a Blogger or a TypePad where you've got a service or you're subscribed to a service of sorts that's the blogging software that kind of figures it out. Or if it's using the MetaWeb Blog API, I suppose it makes it a little... or if it's been around for a long enough time. So you've got two applications, and this supports you, your family.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
And it's you and Sheila and cats.
One cat. Yep. In a house in Ballard. Yeah.
You have to have a cat to blog.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. What are we gonna put up on our weblog?
It's a prerequisite.
We're gonna have pictures of our cat.
You do, don't you? You have pictures of your cat up there,
absolutely,
don't you?
Absolutely. Yeah.
So it's true. It's not. He's not just saying. It's not just lip service to all the bloggers wondering.
No,
does Brent
true.
Have a cat?
Yes.
So you've got this application has been around for a while. Now this is your way of life. Do you find any in light of recent news of FeedDemon being acquired by NewsGator? Is that your meal ticket? Is that your way out? Your exit strategy, if you will?
Yeah, I'm not looking for a way out. I mean, Sheila and I have a great way of life. I mean, to be able to create software and support ourselves, that's fantastic. I don't know. The only other thing I could do is, become a millionaire and retire, I suppose. But, I'm still young. I don't mind working.
So NetNewsWire hasn't quite made you a millionaire yet?
I don't know.
Yeah, good one. Good way to avoid the question. All right, good one, Brent. If that was too personal, it's okay to dodge the question. In the shareware world on the Windows platform, there seems to be so much competition in software that is so grossly overpriced in terms of what you get and in terms of what it is, in terms of competition. For instance, desktop search is now a loss leader. Whereas a couple years ago on the Windows platform, you had maybe one or two desktop search applications.
Mm-hmm.
One leading one was something called X1, or is something called X1, and I don't know how much work, if at all, you do on the PC or virtual PC.
Yeah,
zero.
My PC doesn't boot anymore.
Doesn't
it just
happen.
Says Windows 98. And
that's it.
Just that little strip of color.
All right. X1 desktop search app's been around for a while. It still costs, $79, $99. And the problem is that there are other people, other players in the field who have apps for free. MSN, Google, desktop search applications like my favorite, Copernic Desktop Search. And now, of course, Apple has just recently released Spotlight. People are not necessarily more or less apt to pay for Windows shareware. But from what I've heard, as far as the Mac side of things are concerned, people are more willing to pay for shareware. Have you found that to be true?
I think so. What I found is that Mac users really like to support independent Mac developers. If they think they're doing a good job and care about their customers and, are just... honest, good faith professionals. Then, they like to root for them. They like to help them. They like to buy the software, and that's a very rewarding part of being an OS X developer. It's fantastic. Windows seems to be more of a, I don't know. Maybe it's a more cutthroat place, or maybe it's
there's
a
no relationship.
Place or yeah,
there's no relationship between someone who downloads and the actual developer.
Yeah, see, that's totally different in the OS X sphere. It's like, I think I've emailed with just about everybody. I mean, it's you know, and it's really nice. I like that a lot. It's a very social way of working.
And for that reason alone, you'd never go back to Windows.
Absolutely.
Developing for Windows, I should say. Mm-hmm. And you said that you had started work, or at least worked at one point with Radio Userland.
Sure. I worked for Userland Software for 6 years or something.
Yes, Userland Software, the company. Of course, I was thinking mm-hmm. the product. Was the you actually worked, though, on certain components of that product?
Of Radio Userland?
Yeah, of Radio.
I worked on, at that point, I mainly worked on the kernel, which is kind of the lower layer, the application. I didn't really work on the aggregator or the weblog generator much. I think I also worked on the help text somewhat.
Did you, were you in Ballard at that point?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you didn't have to relocate anywhere?
Yeah, no. Before Ballard, I lived in the Denny Regrade for many years.
Where's that?
Belltown.
Okay.
Kind of near the Space Needle.
Okay. Yeah. So we're talking Seattle, folks.
Yep.
Belltown, I understand.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't know. What would you call it?
Denny Regrade. It's kind of Belltown, between Belltown and the Space Needle,
okay.
Roughly.
Just. All right. I think I've got the gen. I'll have to Google map it later all just right. to get. Oh, all right. That's where it was at. Before that?
Before that, University District.
All right. Yeah. So have you been.
That's going back 15 years or so.
And you were, I'm assuming, studying?
I wasn't, but Sheila was.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So you met. How did you meet, if I could ask?
Sheila and I met at an IHOP in the University District.
An IHOP?
Yeah, in
really?
1989 or whatever. Her sister was dating one of my best friends. And so then one day we just kind of widened the circle. A few months later, her sister and my friend were no longer dating, but Sheila and I have been together ever since.
Wow.
So.
Wow, that's longevity.
Yeah, you
that's
bet.
Quite a while. So, what brought you to Seattle then?
Family was here. Okay. Part of my family was here, and I went to Evergreen State College. So, I did actually spend a couple years in Olympia
studying what?
Just whatever, mushrooms, things like that. You know.
Wait a minute. Mushrooms like the fungus, or mushrooms like, hey, wow, man, this is great.
If I could remember better, I'd tell you.
Hang on, just a second. What? What?
I'm not bringing this in here.
Oh, no, yeah, go ahead. Sorry, folks. That was dinner that had just been ordered, and just minutes before the show started, we've got pizza here, and that's if you heard the doorbell in the back, that's dinner. So
pepperoni pizza.
Yeah, and Jake got something with no cheese because he's allergic to cheese and dairy products. There's an enzyme that actually makes him angry. He's like the Incredible Hulk, although that's greatly exaggerated. Yeah. So you came here studying. Did you graduate then with a degree?
I did not. No. 2 years at Evergreen, and then I went to Seattle Central for a little while.
Hmm.
And
unsatisfied or satisfied with that experience?
Pretty unsatisfied, but I was pretty directionless at that age anyway. So. Yeah, no big deal.
That would be like 21, 22?
Yeah, and younger, yeah.
Right in and around there. Mm-hmm. What were your passions at that point?
Literature, which still is my passion.
So you read a lot?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
What are you reading right now?
Right now I'm reading a great classic science fiction from the 80s, A Tale of Alien Invasion, Footfall, by Larry Niven and Jerry Pournelle.
Have you heard of that one, Jake?
Heard of it, but have not read it.
Oh, okay. So it may not actually be literature, but, you know, I'm enjoying it.
So you've been to the Sci-Fi Museum then, I'm assuming.
I have,
here in
yeah,
Seattle. What
yeah.
do you think?
I enjoyed it. Saw Captain Kirk's chair. I mean, you know,
I think
go wrong.
It's worth going through once.
They've actually got a bunch of writers that are coming in. I think it's either Monday or Tuesday of next week across a variety of fantasy and sci-fi genres, but I can't remember. I think it's a writer's workshop type thing.
Oh, okay.
So is it that you just picked it up just because you've either read it before or you were interested in reading this particular book?
Yeah, I just felt like reading A Tale of Alien Invasion, which occasionally I have to do. And these,
wait, you're not a prophet, are you?
No.
Okay, just making sure.
And these are like demented elephants from space. They have like split trunks and stuff, and they're just awful.
Sci-fi fan?
Well, yeah, clearly.
Okay. I'm going to ask, how clearly have you seen Revenge of the Sith yet?
I have not.
Have not.
No.
What are your plans? At what point?
In a couple weeks, probably, when I can actually get
it dies down.
Yeah, I'm not going to wait in line, you know, or at least not much in line.
Okay. Apparently, software developers for OS X don't have to wait in line.
Truth.
No,
I like those Windows users now.
Yeah, we just we wait in line all day long and then get interviewed by puppet dogs who make fun of us and then show us on national television. Have you seen that Robert Smiley?
No, I think those are Linux users.
No, well, probably. But our radio stream just lost half its people. Jake, thanks. have you seen that Triumph?
Triumph, the comic insult dog. Yeah,
did you see the one with the? He was interviewing the Star Wars freaks, and I think this was about the time that Special Edition was out. I don't know if Phantom Menace was out. Had you seen that one?
I think so. Yeah.
I ended up buying it on DVD. I'm like, I have to own a copy of it. He's interviewing a Darth Vader one. He says, "Which one of these buttons calls your mommy to come pick you up?" Oh man. So let me ask you this then. Star Wars, are you more of a Star Wars guy or Star Trek guy?
More of a Star Trek guy. I enjoy Star Wars very much, though. But, yeah, I'm more of the Star Trek guy.
Or Stargate.
Stargate I never got into.
Yeah, I never got into that either.
Too low budget.
Yeah. What about the movie? The original movie?
I did see that because mainly, I think, because it was not that long after The Crying Game, and it had that same actor in there playing some weird, Egyptian god from space or something. And
oh, wow.
Just kind of, I wanted to see them.
I saw enough of The Crying Game to go, wow. It was strange.
That's one movie that I have never seen.
Well, the thing is the movie is now, enough about it that you see it and it's kind of dramatic. But it loses a lot because you're not supposed to give away the ending, but everybody knows the ending, so it's no longer...
I saw it not knowing the ending, so... Yeah.
And did you feel betrayed, bewildered?
No, I didn't.
No, that's what switched you. That was the switch. That's when you went from Windows to OS X, is after watching The Crying Game.
Absolutely, after what that did to my head,
it twists your psyche around in so many different ways. So
you're not going to tell the people at home that I'm wearing a dress, are you?
No, I didn't plan on doing it, and the webcam was doing its job. We don't even have a webcam, so you have nothing to worry about. Absolutely nothing to worry about.
Or at least not one that you can see.
No, it's all invisible. You're on a reality show right now. It's the Chris Perillo Show reality show.
The reality show I want to be on is that Tiny Home, which is actually...
the commercial?
Yeah. Now that looks cool.
And I felt so cheated. Those Geico commercials just... I feel cheated every time I watch those things. Yeah. And my fiance she was offended actually by one of the recent Geico commercials because she's a caveman.
Oh well.
And many people did not know that.
Yeah, no, I had no idea. You're a lucky man.
I know. Makeup covers up an awful lot. Let me tell you.
Sure.
And she's probably at home right now listening to this stream, or I'm sorry, staying in at her aunt and uncle. She's not. I'm at home right now. So I'm fine. I'm not in the doghouse. The dogs are in the doghouse at this point.
And Geico.
Yes, yeah, Geico, definitely. You've got a lot of background that isn't in, or a lot of, I guess, interest, I should say, that isn't necessarily in software development. What brought you to software development?
Well, let's see. I first started programming back in 1980. My parents bought me an Apple II Plus, and both of them were software developers working for DuPont.
It
was very much, genetic, and it was like they would teach me about modularity as we're eating dinner.
Really?
That's my programming education was just
I got beaten at dinner. You're very lucky.
That's because you didn't eat your peas.
No, that's probably what it was.
See, but I got criticized for not using subroutines often enough.
that'll get you every time.
Yeah, well,
would you get grounded for 2 weeks when you didn't use it?
If I used go-tos too often, I'd have.
So did you batch process your meals?
How was the UI? Was that the dinner? Was it palatable?
Dinner was fine.
So they were aesthetically pleasing dinners then.
Absolutely.
So this is another reason. I'm trying to dig deeper into chili, why you
pigs
went
in a blanket,
to OS X. This being this experience.
My first computer was an Apple, and I just haven't changed.
Well, it's strange. I mean, one of my first series of computers were Commodores, and it seemed to me that a logical jump from Commodore would be to Macintosh. Unfortunately, or fortunately, my father was an accountant, so we had a clone at home.
Uh-huh.
And so I ended up floating onto that side, the command line of things, rather than the user interface type of things.
Mm-hmm.
When did you program your first, I guess, program?
It would have been 1980, 81. I mean, these weren't programs I gave to anyone, but they were programs I actually used.
What was the first one that you shared with the world? Either in the BBS days or...
That I actually shared with the world. Well, I did some programming in the early 80s and didn't pick it up again until 94 or so.
So the internet was just starting to pick up steam.
Yeah. And the first program I shared with the world would have probably come out in 95 or 96. It would have been some... CGI scripts or something like that.
Server-side stuff. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I did that for a number of years.
And when did you realize that you wanted to do what you're doing now? Let me qualify it or put a finer point on it. Did it hit you over the head, or did it just kind of evolve into the thing that it is today?
Let's see. Before Mac OS X was actually out... and I hadn't seen it, but just maybe screenshots, read about it. I was very excited, and I knew that I wanted to do desktop apps for Mac OS X.
Why?
At the time, because I'd been waiting for there to be a fusion of the Unix side, which I had come to use on Linux, with a beautiful interface that only the Apple people seem to produce. And Mac OS X looked like it was going to be it. And I knew that's where I wanted to be.
And you haven't turned back at all?
Yeah, no, not at all.
I'm not trying to win you over at all, because I very much, I'm platform agnostic, and one of the first people to criticize the user interface on the Windows side of things, and how there are a lot of things about OS X that I really appreciate. You can't be an OS X developer and release something that looks like crap.
You know, I was surprised. Apparently, David Pogue, in his Circuits column today, saw a build of Longhorn that is apparently light years ahead of the one we just saw at WinHack. And he did not have, horribly negative things to say about it. I mean, he didn't, rave about it either. But he sounded optimistic, which is a little surprising considering that he's a pretty hardcore Mac guy.
Right, sure.
So, would a new user interface bring you over?
No way.
You're set.
Yeah, I'm set. Yeah.
Now, what is...
Well, it's not that Mac OS X is perfect either. You know, it certainly has things I would change about it. But I'm sure every OS X user would say the same thing.
What would you change about OS X? I'm not going to send this to Woz or anything.
No, sure.
Jobs never returns my email, so you're fine.
I think that the user interface has not been consistent enough lately. You know, there's... Now, so many different window types, for instance.
Brushed metal,
yeah,
or
exactly.
Aqua.
Yep. You see apps from Apple that, well, it looks like it should have a standard customizable toolbar, but then it doesn't. And then you wonder why. Or why is that? Why does that table have a background color and no other ones do? You know, there's just a lot of little things like that. But I understand. You know, they want to do cool things. They don't necessarily have... people, you know, running around being user interface Nazis, but maybe they should, but well.
Did you move to Tiger?
Yeah, oh yeah, just in the past few days.
Or 10.4.1, I should say, now.
Yeah.
The new one.
Which,
that was actually, most people would see that as a negative. I see that as a big positive. The fact that they would issue a major point revision, you know, weeks after releasing the operating system, I think is a very, very smart
move. That's
just
sort of standard operating procedure.
Well, it's standard operating procedure for Apple, but it's not for, say, Microsoft, where they let you wait a year, 2 years, 3 years before they update anything of significance. So that was quite refreshing to see that 10.4.1 had already been released. I sit on that side. I'd rather see more frequent updates.
Sure.
Rather than have to wait and wait and wait and wait.
Well, yeah, if there are bugs, you want them fixed.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, the one bug I don't think they're going to fix, because I don't think they realize it's a bug, is the mail app.
Yeah, I find that.
What the hell happened
topic,
there?
Yeah.
That's
the number one reason to buy Mac Office. Is to get
Entourage
and throw away
mail.app. Seriously, I mean, it worked fine. It looked okay. It was fine. Yeah. Why? Why did they go to the? It doesn't even fit into the rest of Panther and Aqua. It's got these buttons that just don't. They're not Safari like. Yeah. Which in Safari was a departure. I mean, it's kind of. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know. I do think that was a very, very strange decision.
Strange or stupid?
Not entirely stupid, because people are going to use the new features and the new mail. The smart folders and stuff, you know, are very compelling. And so people are going to overlook those buttons. And
smart folders. Is that kind of like what Outlook search folders is? And you may not be familiar
with
that.
Yeah, I'm not familiar with that. But
explain what...
If it's... or maybe they're called smart mailboxes. I can't remember. But the idea is you set up a mailbox that doesn't contain mail. It contains mail that matches a certain criteria.
Yeah. So. It's Outlook 2003 has something called search folders.
It's probably most comparable to iTunes smart playlists, actually.
Yeah, absolutely.
Where you're setting criteria and then you see mail that's based on that criteria, whereas in iTunes you'd see songs based on criteria.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And throughout Tiger, there are now smart folders in the Finder.
That's the whole Spotlight,
smart,
Spotlight concept.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
Now, what did you think about the Mac Mini move? In terms of Apple releasing this product that was just under $500, although to make it usable, you really had to spend a little more than $500.
Sure. I wanted to buy like 10 of them because I just thought they were cute. I mean, so small and neat.
Just because they were so cute. I want to buy 10. They're just so adorable.
I ended up not buying any because I have computers. Yeah. But, you know, yeah, I did. I thought they were adorable.
Why do you think Apple did it?
That's a good question. And I don't pretend to be a CEO of a giant company, so I don't necessarily know. But...
That's a good thing. Don't kid yourself.
But it seems like people are always saying, well, Apple, they're dumb. They don't have a computer for under $500. Well, people just can't say that anymore. Yep. So that bit of press doesn't exist. Because technically, there is a computer that's a dollar less than
that. And it's the cheapest upgrade path from an iPod.
Yeah, it's just a little bit bigger. And actually, it costs less than some iPods, I think.
Yeah. Now, what... If any of your friends have switched, I mean, the people who have been using Windows, I'm assuming you associate with both Windows users, Linux users, and
sure,
Mac
there are
users.
Sure, there are Windows users, even in my family. It's a shame.
Yeah, that is
a
dirty shame.
It's a blight, but, you know.
It's not genetic, apparently. Have they, you know, been more compelled to switch because of those lower price points?
No. No, the people who like Windows, or I don't know if like is the right word, but the users of Windows continue to use Windows.
It's a fundamental difference, and I think, you know, not just in the shareware world where, as you had said, you know, being a Mac shareware developer, you've got a community that supports the developer because they've got that bond with them. Mm-hmm. Even you say, I want to buy 10 of them because they're so cute. You would never hear that come out of the mouth of someone who lives on the PC because there's nothing cute in this industry. It's very on this side of the industry, I should say, in the PC realm. It's just, I'm sitting in front of an IBM ThinkPad. I mean, this is pretty far from elegant, but it's functional and it's a rock solid piece of equipment, and it stands the test of time.
Supposedly, you can drop it.
I would never
drop an iBook and expect it to work again because that plastic casing is just looks flimsy.
The aesthetics of the operating system, the aesthetics of the software, the relationship that the user has is just fundamentally—it's fundamentally different. So you were struggling to find the word that, you know, Windows users feel to their PC. I don't think they feel anything. I think they're completely disconnected from. Oh, that doesn't sound good. Were we picking up levels of the thunder and lightning that's happening outside?
Not meaningful levels.
All right. Well, if I go deaf, you know, that means lightning has struck.
We do have a surge filter on.
Do we?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So we're not going to get shocked if, like, lightning surges through the house?
In theory, no.
Oh, okay.
We haven't actually tested
you're right.
The shock on the
door. It's hard to dial up the lightning on demand.
It's Seattle. Just give it 5 minutes. And actually, this is the first, right now, the weather's...
The last 2 days, it seemed more like a rainforest. Because it's like, it's rain, sun, rain, sun, rain, sun. What is that?
Yeah.
Is that normal? I mean, is that...
Yeah, for this time of year, I mean... I think this would be essentially a rainforest if there were no people here. So,
well, I know the peninsula actually is a rainforest. Mm-hmm,
yeah.
So,
oh, is it?
Yeah.
This would be a blackberry rainforest.
The blackberries completely would take overrun over with
everything.
Blackberries.
Yep, absolutely.
Hmm. Yeah. No, and you don't mean like the rim, like.
No, those did take over though.
Well, I didn't know if they like.
No, I mean the
this
actual
is where
vegetation.
They got them, they plucked them from. You know, I don't.
Yeah,
know
I can't
if, like,
believe the
trees.
Blackberries are like a massive like weed or something.
Oh yeah,
here.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Really?
Last weekend, I spent quite a bit of time whacking them out of behind my garage.
That bad?
Absolutely.
You can't
eat them? There's a vacant lot over near my house, because I live up just north of the U District. I think technically it's Roosevelt, but it's like on the edge of Ravenna.
Mm-hmm.
And there's the vacant lot is like looks like it's gradually being overgrown with blackberries.
But can't you just eat them?
I don't know.
God, you think maybe. It'd be like a blueberry syrup capital or something like, you know, instead of calling the Emerald
City.
But
you're so mad at them, you don't want to.
Well, how can you be mad at a blueberry? I mean, quite honestly.
It's not the fruit that's the problem. It's the vines.
Yeah.
And they have got like little sharp pokey things all over them.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're thick.
I'm not a fan of sharp, thick, pokey things.
It's like getting trapped in, getting trapped in like massive, like, brain. You know, like the thing like in Harry Potter where they get like sucked into the vines.
Oh, yes.
That kind of a scenario.
But speaking of sharp, thick, pointy things. The pizza is here, and
yes, it is. I don't know. Those are round things.
Right, well, yeah, but when you pull out the slice, it's actually pointy. It's like a triangle thing. And I don't know if we've got an audio segment we can play for folks while we take a bite and a break here.
I can cue something up minutes. Here.
We've got quite a few mini segments for everybody tonight. We've got some gaming segments from E3, or some report. One report on E3 from Lord Cat, who of course is very active over in Locker Gnome's Game Invasion channel, as well as in the chat room, and is always on ICQ, seemingly, and was officially the person that he knew out at E3 this week, apparently just snubbed us. I wanted to get more information on the PSP, which is just an absolute dream come true, and they snubbed us. They didn't want to talk to this guy because apparently they only deal with reputable gaming sites.
And, so we have a bad reputation?
Apparently we have with Sony. So we
I didn't even know we had a reputation
with
Sony.
But apparently we do, and it doesn't exist. So it gives, you know, lends further credence to me saying that they suck for the whole memory stick thing.
Hey, well,
but,
I hope the Xbox 360 crushes them in that case.
You know what? There's a big debate on that, whether or not the PS3 is going to trump the Xbox.
But, hey, Final Fantasy came to Xbox. That is definitely going to have an impact because it comes out first.
But it's not... The Xbox 360 is not backwards compatible with older games. The older games have to be updated to Xbox 360 level, so people are going to have to repurchase.
How is that different from every other gaming console that's ever come out?
Because the PS2 is backwards compatible to PS1, and the PS3 is backwards compatible to PS2.
Well,
and if you're comparing the PS3 versus, from what I see, the buzz seems to be leaning towards PS3. There are a lot more people who are a lot more jazzed outside the Windows realm for the PS3.
It'll all come down to the games. I mean, ultimately, it'll come down to who can score the best games, because it always does.
That's true. Although I am looking very forward to that Media Center functionality of being able to have a lot of that extender functionality built into the Xbox unit. I'm not very likely to get a PS3, even though I have a PSP. But then again, I don't know. That's just the way I'm falling. Did you know, though, Brent, before we go, right now, before we go to grab a quick bite, that they're actually demonstrating Xbox 360 on Apple G5s?
No, I had no idea.
Yep, they're using they went the other way. They dropped Intel. They went with a completely different platform, completely different processor, and with Motorola. And so to demonstrate what they're demonstrating, they're using and they bought. Cool. They actually purchased machines. They say they purchased machines. So
they didn't just fall off a truck or something.
No, 5-finger discount here going on here. So Jake, what are we going to listen to here?
The Windows Media Stream for the live broadcast of The Chris Perillo Show is provided by Limelight Networks. Listen to the live Chris Perillo Show in Windows Media Player. Download the latest version of the player for Mac and Windows users at Microsoft.com/Windows Media.